This is the Intego Mac Podcast,
the voice of Mac security,
for Thursday, April 11th, 2024. This week's Intego Mac Podcast security headlines include a comparison of the number of patched security vulnerabilities in the most recent updates to Apple and Microsoft operating systems. A new scam doesn't want your money or personal info, but it does want your eyeballs. We'll explain how it uses AI to put the squeeze on victims. Info from a years-old AT&T data breach has been made public, and data from tens of millions of users has been exposed. And Apple has said that the RCS messaging protocol is coming to its operating systems later this year. Just how many messaging protocols is too many? Now, here are the hosts of the Intego Mac Podcast, veteran Mac journalist Kirk McElhern, and Intego's chief security analyst, Josh Long.
Good morning, Josh. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing just fine. Are we going to launch a new segment of the podcast called iPad Watch? As we're waiting for Apple to release iPads or even announce an event to release iPads?
You know what? I just want to push iPads kind of out of my mind because I'm going to go out of my mind because I'm so tired of Apple not releasing iPads at this point. It's not even funny anymore.
Hey, listeners, I'll tell you a secret. Josh doesn't even use an iPad.
No, I don't. But I am one of those people that everybody goes to for advice on technology. And I've had several people talk to me over the past several months and even just in the past week asking me, when's Apple coming out with a new iPad? Like, I really need a new iPad, Josh. What should I get? Which one? And I'm like, don't get any of them. They're all really old at this point. And Apple's probably going to be releasing some soon. So I'm tired of it.
So two possibilities. One, as the rumors have been talking about May, early May, mid-May, late May, it keeps changing. Or just waiting until WWDC. Because maybe, as I've been thinking, there's something new in the entire iPad line that merits a long explanation from Johnny down in the CPU basement at Apple.
Well, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. In the meantime, though, if you want to get an Amazon Fire tablet, I mean, they're not terrible. I mean, they won't be able to run any of your iOS apps, but if really you're just kind of using it as a web browser and, you know, watching streaming video, the major streaming video apps are available on Amazon's App Store. So, you know, I maybe get that in the meantime, but honestly, at this point, I think Apple's probably releasing new models next month. So maybe wait a month if you can.
Okay, we'll check back next week. We want to open with a story about iCloud. Now, we talked last week about this class action suit that a bunch of people had launched about iCloud storage being insufficient, even insufficient for backing up devices, which means that you have to pay that extra 99 cents a month to be able to back up your iPhone, which is a little ridiculous. John Gruber had an article today entitled, "From the Department of Spending Tim Cook's Money, Online Photo Storage is Surely Expensive to Offer, but Apple Should Offer More." And he's pointing out how both Google and Apple charge for online storage and the fact that 5 gigabytes, even if it's not big enough for backing up your device, it's not big enough to store a lot of people's photos and videos. And he points out in the article that a lot of iPhone users aren't even shooting in 4K because they don't have enough storage either on their devices or in iCloud. 4K video at 60 frames per second. Now, let's face it, you don't really need 4K at 60 frames per second. 30 is fine, but it takes up 440 megabytes per minute. That's 26 gigabytes per hour. You can't put that on an iPhone very easily if you've got a bunch of other stuff. I mean, if you've got a 128 gigabyte iPhone, you might have enough room for 26 for 1 hour of video. Of course, you're maybe not going to shoot an hour of video, but imagine you've got a kid's birthday party. You're going to be shooting a number of videos during the day. That could be an hour and a half, 2 hours. Not only might you not be able to keep it on the phone, you might not be able to put it up to iCloud unless you pay for additional storage. Remember that a lot of people don't have Macs to be able to offload the videos, and they have to go through the cloud.
Right. And these are all good points. I mean, Apple does advertise that the iPhone 15 shoots up to 4K 60 frames per second. And well, you're not going to be able to shoot a lot of video at that resolution and frame rate. At the same time, you know, if you're actually a professional and you really need to shoot in 4K at 60 frames per second, You're probably going to be attaching an external storage device. Now, I know the average consumer is not doing this, right? Like that's kind of silly. But even Apple, remember they filmed one of their keynote presentations using an iPhone just to show off how beautiful the picture is, that you could actually do this on an iPhone, and they used external storage. If you watch the behind the scenes video, the Scary Fast event on October 31st, behind the scenes at Scary Fast, Apple's keynote event shot on iPhone and edited on Mac. And of course, they used external storage.
And it wasn't just one guy holding an iPhone. It was a complicated rig with a gimbal and lights and storage and everything like that. But the point is, imagine, so your kid's birthday party and your brother-in-law is there and you're showing off your iPhone 15 Pro and he says, oh, I heard it can shoot 4K at 60 frames per second. And you go into settings, yeah, watch. And you shoot for about 30 seconds and all of a sudden it stops because there's no room. But this is what people might want to do because they've seen ads that say you can do it with an iPhone. Okay, in the Department of Vulnerabilities, Microsoft's biggest patch Tuesday in history. What's the number?
147 vulnerabilities, and two of them were actively exploited. And also, I think there were 60 some remote code execution vulnerabilities too. So a lot of really serious vulnerabilities in this round of updates this month. Now that's across Microsoft's entire software product line. So this is not just Windows. This is other products included in that as well. By comparison, Apple has had some similar big numbers in the past. Most of the time, when Apple patches a ton of vulnerabilities, it's with a 0.0 release of an operating system. We were just kind of looking back at the last few macOS versions when they came out. And as of right now, the macOS Ventura 13.0 release notes say that they patched 156 CVEs. So these are vulnerabilities with individual numbers assigned to them. And there were other security issues, of course, that they patched besides that. But it's pretty rare for Apple or Microsoft to patch these giant numbers around 150 vulnerabilities at a time. So it's kind of a big deal. So if you know people, and you probably do, who are using Windows, remind them to check for Windows updates because there's a bunch of vulnerabilities that just got patched.
Okay, sometime last year, I talked about how I got an email addressed to a website that I manage saying that I was using some copyrighted images and that I had to pay the person who owned them a certain amount of Bitcoin. Obviously, it was a scam. And we discovered that this same message had been posted as comments to a number of websites. There's a new scam that's coming out, which is and I'm going to use the 404 website's headline, a quote, law firm of AI-generated lawyers is sending fake threats and SEO scam. So this one is saying the same thing. It's talking about that you've got some, copyrighted images, and it says, we're reaching out on behalf of the intellectual property division of a notable entity, in relation to an image connected to our client. They're not asking for money. They're not asking for Bitcoin. What they're asking is that the user put a clickable link beneath the photo to a website called, I won't mention the name, but it's like some cheap website that's hawking whatever kind of scam or whatever, or the law firm would take action. So the law firm's not real and the pictures of the lawyers are AI generated. They could have just taken pictures off of LinkedIn.
Yeah, well, that's a fair point. But this seems to be something that we're going to see a lot more of, right? People using AI-generated photos to make things seem more plausible, people using ChatGPT or similar tools to write the text of these scam messages, basically. Because even using ChatGPT proper, like you don't necessarily have to go to some designed for bad guys version of it. You can actually tell ChatGPT, hey, I'm a lawyer and I need to send a letter on that sounds like this, that talks about these points to somebody who's violating copyright law. So write this letter for me. And it will do that for you. Because it doesn't know that you're actually a Fisher who's trying to scam people. So the idea behind this, it sounds like, is they're trying to just increase their own search engine placement by getting a lot of prominent websites or high-ranking websites to link directly to them, to this actual scam site or malware site or whatever it is they're trying to push. Search engine optimization is this whole thing that we don't have time to get into, but basically, this is one of the ways that you can convince Google that you have a prominent site is if you get a whole bunch of high-ranking sites to link directly to you. So that's what this particular version of the scam is all about.
You know, my website doesn't get a lot of traffic. I don't really publish new content on it, and I haven't in years. I publish links to all the articles I publish, my podcast episodes, etc. Several times a week, I get offers to buy links for old articles or guest articles, which would include links to services. So it's not even they're looking for high traffic websites or high authority websites. I guess they're just trying to get the top million websites in the world because it's a pyramid, right? Once you get down below, people get very few hits. But this is extremely common. This is something that, as you say, every incoming link adds to the value of a website.
By the way, I noticed something the other day. So you know how I've been researching a lot of scam apps and things like that in the App Store? So I happened to notice that in the web version of these App Store listings, Apple will link back to the homepage and privacy policy of the original company. And when Apple is putting these links on their website, I notice that Apple is not using a no-follow tag for these links. So it means that these sketchy apps are able, if they can get into the App Store, they can link back and sort of get Apple.com to promote their sketchy websites. I haven't really thought of this before, but this is kind of a problem. And maybe if somebody at Apple is listening, you might want to do something about that. You should really be using no-follow links when you're linking back to these companies' homepages.
Okay, in other security news, and I have no idea what this means, Google Chrome adds V8 Sandbox, a new defense against browser attacks. Can you explain this in 2 minutes?
All right. Well, so V8 can mean a lot of different things. It's a beverage that's based on 8 vegetables. It's also an 8-cylinder engine configured in a V shape. But V8 is also a special engine that's used by the Google Chrome engine and other Chromium-based browsers. And so each web browser has kind of its own rendering engine. So the main one that's used by Safari, Apple's Safari browser, is WebKit. And the main one that's used by Google Chrome is called Blink, which is actually a fork of WebKit, meaning they took WebKit and kind of made their own version of it several years ago. I think it was in 2013. But they also have another engine that Chrome uses, which is called V8. And V8 is the engine that's specifically used to render JavaScript and WebAssembly. And this V8 engine has been exploited in live, real-world attacks many times over the past couple of years. You might remember that several times last year, we talked about these Chrome zero-day vulnerabilities that were being actively exploited. They had to patch the browser, and all the other Chromium-based browsers had to patch as well. And some of those vulnerabilities were vulnerabilities specifically in the V8 engine. So what Google is doing is they're putting a sandbox around it. And so basically, they're trying to mitigate all of these attacks all in one fell swoop so they don't have to worry and issue these emergency patches quite so often, because they'll already be sandboxing or putting these things in a specialized container so they can't do bad stuff on your system.
Okay, I'm a bit slow here. If it's that easy to do, why didn't they do it before?
That's a great question. I don't know, but I'm happy that they're at least going to start sandboxing in Chrome now.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a huge data breach that affects 70 million people in the United States and more.
Protecting your online security and privacy has never been more important than it is today. Intego has been proudly protecting Mac users for over 25 years, and our latest Mac Protection Suite includes the tools you need to stay protected. Intego's Mac Premium Bundle X9 includes Virus Barrier, the world's best Mac anti-malware protection, NetBarrier, powerful inbound and outbound firewall security, Personal Backup to keep your important files safe from ransomware, and much more to help protect, secure, and organize your Mac. Best of all, it's compatible with macOS Sonoma and the latest Apple Silicon Macs. Download the free trial of Mac Premium Bundle X9 from Intego.com today. When you're ready to buy, Intego Mac Podcast listeners can get a special discount by using the link in this episode's show notes at podcast.intego.com. That's podcast.intego.com. And click on this episode to find the special discount link exclusively for Intego Mac Podcast listeners. Intego, world-class protection and utility software for Mac users made by the Mac security experts.
So, Josh, is your mobile phone contract with AT&T?
I have used them actually for a work phone in the past, but it was many, many years ago. I think it was more than 10 years ago at this point.
So you're not one of the 70 million people whose data has been exposed in a huge data breach of AT&T's records?
Not that I know of, although now you've got me wondering, because how many really old records?
Well, how far back does it go? Yeah.
Okay, well, we should back up here for a moment and say that there was a big data breach at AT&T, and apparently this may have happened, the actual breach may have happened somewhere around 2019. But the leak of this big dump of data about AT&T customers happened in August 2021. So it's been a while since this happened. But a couple weekends ago, this data that was previously only available from a bad guy selling it on the dark web has now been available on the public internet. And so now it's back in the news, and there's a lot of really sensitive data here that got leaked.
And AT&T just issued a press release talking about this. So this isn't something that people discovered and the company didn't want to talk about. This is something that the company, I guess, had to announce because it became public and people knew that this data was out there.
Right. And just to give you an idea of how severe this data is, it includes full names, email addresses, mailing addresses, so probably your home address, phone numbers, dates of birth, AT&T account numbers. Okay, that might not be such a big deal. And passcodes, which I think means the pins associated with your account. That could be bad if someone's trying to compromise your AT&T account for some reason. But the worst of all is social security numbers, which that's a big deal in the US because you generally can't change those. Like, no matter how many data breaches your social security number has appeared in, you can't change it. And so it's kind of a problem.
AT&T says that the data set appears to be from 2019 or earlier, impacting approximately 7.6 million current AT&T account holders and approximately 65.4 million former account holders. Does that mean they've lost 65.4 million people since 2019?
Well, possibly, or maybe it includes data on people like me who had a work phone many, many years ago, and maybe they still had my records. Gosh, I really hope not. Now I'm worried because I hadn't even really thought about that until you brought this up.
Okay, we have an article on the Intego Mac security blog, and it talks about checking the website Have I Been Pwned, which we've mentioned often. I hope that after we finish recording, you check that website with that previous work address out of curiosity to see if your data's there. Because, again, it's not just the email address, it's all the rest that's important. So if Have I Been Pwned has that address, that means that your entire life history is in this data breach.
Very interesting. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I suspect that my information is probably not included in this data dump, but I'll double check just to make sure.
Okay, now we've talked a lot last year about messaging, iMessage, and the fact that on Android people aren't happy because the bubble's the wrong color. But we have two messaging stories. Sunbird, the security nightmare that tried to bring iMessage to Android, is returning, according to 9to5 Google. Sunbird had some sort of workaround to try and get iMessage to work, and then they stopped, and then they're coming back. But at the same time, Beeper, which is the one we talked about several times with this saga of them introducing a way to get around Apple's system to register numbers, or maybe to have you register numbers from a Mac you own to get it to work on your Android phone. Apple shut it down. It's been acquired by Automattic. Automattic is the company that owns WordPress. And Automattic previously bought a company called Texts, or Text.com, which was another messaging app last year. And together they have, as The Verge says, big plans for the future of messaging.
Okay, well, I know this is a little confusing because we're kind of talking about two different companies at once, but the whole idea behind this is that there are companies out there that still really think this whole lack of iMessage on Android is a big problem, which kind of confuses me because we know that iOS 18 is going to include RCS support, which is Google's secure encrypted, you know, text message standard that they use from Android to Android. Now we're going to have that in iOS 18 coming out later this year. So, I mean, like, is this, come on, like, really? Are we really that worried about getting blue bubbles and being included in the iMessage ecosystem?
So Automattic is an interesting company. It started out very slowly and it basically powers the web, with, you know, a huge number of large websites running on WordPress and lots of others running WordPress.com. It owns Tumblr, and it's acquiring more and more things. And one of the things that Matt Mullenweg, who runs Automattic, said, that he wants to create a great private, secure, and open source messaging client for people to have control of their communications. Now, that made me think about something. Why can we not send messages to and from different devices and different apps? It's like, can you imagine if we couldn't call each other using different phones? Like if you had an iPhone, you couldn't call someone on an Android phone, or if you couldn't call someone on a landline made by another company. It really seems like, and maybe RCS is a solution, but it really seems like there needs to be one protocol that everyone agrees on that provides the basic secure messaging service for text and video and photos and audio and all that. If the apps want to add additional features, that's fine, as long as they don't prevent people from sending and receiving messages with other apps.
I feel like this is kind of a non-issue because we can call each other, we can text each other. You know, if you're concerned about your text messages not being delivered securely, there's lots of services for that. There's Signal, there's WhatsApp, there's all kinds of things out there.
But that's the problem. Everyone you want to communicate with has to use the same app. You can't just communicate from one app to whatever they're using. Let me give you an example. I know someone who has an iPhone and who communicates with someone who has an iPhone, but it doesn't work right. And the other person can't get messages to work. So they end up sending SMSs. And when the first person sends photos to the second person via SMS, they are charged at a very exorbitant rate. Because when you send photos over SMS, they're treated as what they call them MMSs, multimedia messages, and they're not in your plan. So that confuses everything. And when someone does that, they're not paying attention to whether the bubble is green or blue. They're just sending it because they're used to sending photos.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I guess if you're paying per text, then yeah, that's more of a concern for you individually. I think for a lot of people, though, I feel like this is kind of a non-issue, and it's going to be even more of a non-issue, especially when we get RCS as a built-in thing in the Messages app on iPhones. So assuming that that all actually happens in iOS 18, that we're making the kind of assumption about that because Apple has said that it's coming later this year, and well, we know we're getting iOS 18 later this year, so it kind of makes sense. The timing of it makes sense. But at the same time, Apple also said that they're trying to push for better security in the standard rather than using Google's proprietary extensions for RCS. So that all kind of has to line up with when Apple plans to release RCS messaging on iPhone. In any case, once all this actually happens, we have RCS on iPhone and it's interoperable with Android, whenever that exactly happens, then I feel like we're past the point where we need to worry about blue bubbles. At least your messages are secure. At least you don't have to worry about your videos being downscaled and blurry and getting charged for those text messages anymore.
Okay, but can I send messages from messages on my iPhone to someone else using Telegram, Signal, or WhatsApp? That's what I want. I want this all to work together, right? I want all of these apps to work together.
Okay, but why do you want that?
WhatsApp is very popular here. I don't want to use WhatsApp. It's a hassle. I don't need multiple messaging apps. And so I can't participate in WhatsApp conversations for people who have Android, don't have iMessage, and use WhatsApp. And you talk about Signal because it's more secure, but if I can't send from messages to Signal, then I've got to download Signal as well, and I've got to have Telegram just in case someone uses Telegram, and I've got to have I don't know how many other messaging apps, and that's the problem. There needs to be one common protocol that every app can use.
Well, okay, I can see the argument. At the same time, I feel like that adds so many like unnecessary complications to all of these messaging services. Now they've got to have support the same standard that everyone else uses. Now, I also recognize that there is a little bit of an issue here that we haven't really touched on in this conversation, which is that on Android, you can set a default messaging app. You can't do that currently on an iPhone. So you're kind of stuck with if all your SMS messages, your RCS messages, and your your iMessages all go through the one Apple Messages app on your iPhone, and you can't switch to something else by default. So if you wanted to have everything come into WhatsApp, Nope, sorry, you can't do that. Now, maybe the EU is going to force Apple to do that at some point. I would not be terribly surprised if that eventually happens. I don't know. I feel like this is overly complicated. I do agree that it's kind of annoying that you've got to download different apps if you want different people to message you. But at the same time, I feel like it's potentially problematic to kind of force all of these companies to use the same standard and be fully interoperable with each other, because then you don't get the advantages that are platform specific that, for example, iMessage has, and for example, maybe Threema has, that's better than the others, the better than the competitors.
Okay, we want to talk quickly about a critical RCE bug. I don't know what an RCE bug is. You're putting a lot of things in the show notes that I don't know anything about. It's in 92,000 D-Link NAS devices, and they're exploited in attacks. Now, a NAS is a network-attached storage device. D-Link is a company that makes all sorts of network devices. What's an RCE bug?
Okay, well, RCE is the thing that I mentioned earlier related to the Microsoft patches this week that I mentioned there was 60-something remote code execution vulnerabilities.
Why didn't they put that in the headline? Remote code execution. That says something.
Probably because RCE is three letters and this is a nerd site that we're linking to. So
Okay, okay, okay,
I think
okay.
they're making the assumption that you know what RCE stands for, but they do explain it in the article. So,
Okay, I'll remember it next time.
okay. So, remote code execution vulnerabilities are pretty severe. And basically, the problem here is that a lot of people have their Internet of Things devices and other things on their network that are directly attached to the internet, either plugged into a device that's connected directly to the internet, or if it does go through a firewall like your router, maybe they have port forwarding turned on so that you have the ability to, from somewhere else in the world, connect to your home network and get to the files on your network attached storage in this case. So the problem is that these devices are no longer getting any firmware updates, or which means no longer getting security updates. There are known vulnerabilities. They're being used in active attacks in the wild. And now these devices are being infected with malware and are being used as part of a botnet, basically. And so this is really potentially problematic. Now, I don't imagine that probably a large percentage of our audience has one of these particular network attached storage devices and has it directly connected to the internet. But this is something that's worth paying attention to. We talk all the time about how important it is to make sure that your router's firmware is up to date so that you're getting security patches for it. But any device on your network that's accessible from the public internet also needs to be patched too. And that could include things like network attached storage devices, which you might be using to back up your Mac. You might be using it for Time Machine backups over your network, for example, or something like that.
Network attached storage devices are interesting. There are many computers that generally run a version of Linux or a proprietary operating system that's based on Linux. And for many years, I had a Synology NAS, and I could run WordPress on it. I could host a WordPress website on it, which would be accessible to the public internet using a dynamic DNS. So if you have something like that and the device can be attacked, it could take over the site. And, it doesn't hack the site to change the way it looks. It puts some pages deep down into some directories, the kind that are used for phishing attacks.
Right. And this, by the way, this happens a lot. I've done a lot of research into these types of attacks over the past couple decades, probably. And it's very common to see good sites that are compromised by attackers. And then sometimes they actually do infect the whole site, meaning that you might land on a page from a Google search result and then get redirected to something malicious. But in other cases, like Kirk was talking about there, you sometimes have sites that are deeply kind of embedded, and you only know that they exist if some malicious site redirects there. And so you may have no idea that your WordPress site from the year 2000, which for some reason you haven't patched for all that time, is now getting infected and distributing malware or sending people to scam sites or things like that.
Okay, that's enough for this week. Until next week, Josh, stay secure.
All right, stay secure.
Thanks for listening to the Intego Mac Podcast, the voice of Mac security, with your hosts, Kirk McElhern and Josh Long. To get every weekly episode, be sure to follow us in Apple Podcasts or subscribe in your favorite podcast app. And if you can, leave a rating, a like, or a review. Links to topics and information mentioned in the podcast can be found in the show notes for the episode at podcast.intego.com. The Intego website is also where to find details on the full line of Intego security and utility software. Intego.com.